Pianist Keith Jarrett writes, "Music is an amazing thing. It doesn't exist as a stationary object. It moves in real time and can be uplifting both to the player and the listener. The melting, transfigurative moment, that feeling of everything being there just for an instant, that surrender that overcomes us as players, if we're good enough, and leads us on to the next pregnant second, patient in the knowledge that there is always, waiting in the wings, the next chance to feel this fullness and celebrate it, as it is only in the nature of art to produce it this way. To this, we dedicate our lives. But it is not for us alone. It is also made for you, the listener, to feel these same feelings along with us, to participate, and to also be uplifted by it. Art is dying in this world, and so is listening, as the world becomes more full of toys and special effects. With this death will come the undoing of many possible feelings. Beautiful, tender, deep, trusting, true, sad, full of internal meaning and color. Closeness won't have to necessarily be physical. Intimacy will be hard to find. Communication will be lost. Here is some music for you. Take it, and it's yours. Charlie Hayden and I are obsessed with beauty. An ecstatic moment in music is worth the lifetime of mastery that goes into it, because it can be shared." Words of Keith Jarrett in his notes for the album Jasmine that he made with bassist Charlie Hayden, released in 2010. Keith Jarrett touches on the power of music, the experience of beauty, to preserve something in our lives he sees we may be losing, a complexity and richness of experience and feeling that's what makes us human. Something worth dedicating his life to, he says, and it's an experience that involves all parts of us. That's why it's so appropriate that we're hearing Keith Jarrett and Charlie Hayden playing Body and Soul here. We're invited to experience some of the music Keith Jarrett has created that might just immerse us in a sense of the beautiful. It's part of a tradition that's almost three decades old at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit. The tradition of a jazz worship service began in 1992 when the church sought a substitute organist for Labor Day weekend. The worship leaders turned to their pastor, Reverend Bill Carter, a seasoned jazz pianist. He invited other musicians to join him in leading the service. It has become a standing room only event and has continued as an annual musical tradition on Labor Day weekend. This year's event will celebrate the music of pianist Keith Jarrett. It's Sunday, September 3rd. The Reverend Bill Carter is founder and leader of the nationally known Presby Bop Quartet and the group's pianist. He stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about Keith Jarrett and his music.
He's from Allentown, actually Emmaus, and lives right across the Delaware River in a small one-traffic light town in New Jersey. Actually, John Coates Jr. Hired him as the house drummer for a while at the Deerhead Inn. So he has old ties to the whole region, and it's rather amazing that I don't believe he's ever played here, at least with this current status, worldwide status, and that nobody plays his music, so this is our opportunity.
I was going to ask you why, and that's part of the reason, yeah?
I think so, yeah. And every year now we try to do a different jazz for the communion service at Clark Summit. And this is extremely lyrical. It is the kind of tunes where people will leave humming them. And I think it really fits this variation of the Presby Bop Quartet.
If we think about Keith Jarrett and don't know much about him, we think of the Cone concert and we think of his improvising for 45 minutes.
Right, which I experienced actually as a graduate student. I heard him in Princeton's MacArthur Theater one night do a solo piano concert. Was there with a date. We laid out our $40 each for the tickets, went to the concert, and it was about an hour of him coming out and gyrating and moaning and his hands flying all over the piano. It was extremely chaotic. We didn't know what to think of it. There was a brief intermission. He came out again and did 45 minutes more of the same. And I remember thinking, someone probably appreciates this, but it ain't me. $40 in 1985 was an astronomical sum for a graduate student. And it was particularly lost on my date, you know, who wasn't sure she wanted to be there. He leaves. There's thunderous applause. Everybody stands up. He comes back for an encore, sits down, and plays Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And it was so transcendently beautiful that it took our breath away. And it was just 3 or 4 minutes, played through the tune twice, ended in silence, and that was why I paid for the ticket. It was that pursuit of beauty, which is really the theme for this year's kind of gathering.
The pieces that you've chosen to share with us are in that mode then.
They are. Jarrett has had 3 notable groups over his long career. The most recent, which has recently concluded, is a trio called the Standards Trio. And with very little preparation, they would come out and play songs from the Great American Songbook. And this is a man, of course, whose record company records every single concert he plays, because it's all going to be, you know, available for release at some point or another. But in the 70s, he had 2 quartets. There was the American Quartet with Dewey Redman, and there was the European Quartet with Jan Garbarek, the Norwegian saxophonist, and very, very different groups. We're going to be drawing from the latter of those. And this incredibly tuneful music that goes straight for the heart.
And is that why you say it's appropriate for the current Presby Bop ensemble where you are right now?
Yeah. Al Hamm is having shoulder replacement surgery soon. And so Michael Carbone is stepping in. And Mike brings just a different kind of R&B kind of flair, which will fit Jarrett's kind of gospel-y kind of music, but also he plays the soprano sax in such a way it breaks anybody's heart open. So with Tony Marino on the bass and young Tyler Dempsey on the drums, it's going to be just a lot of fun.
Now you as a pianist are listening to his music as music, but you're listening as a pianist as well. What about technique? What does he do that makes him Keith Jarrett?
He inspires me to practice more. He's astonishing. I mean, that concert 30-some years ago in Princeton, shortly before that, Oscar Peterson had played on the same stage. And, you know, he was a person with 20 fingers, all going in different directions. Astonishing. Well, Jarrett blew him away. I mean, by comparison, he's an amazing pianist. And just when you think you've got Jarrett pigeonholed, he does something totally different. He records Bach suites, he rips off some Rachmaninoff, he can play virtually anything, he's a full, complete musician. But when he gets into playing this kind of sweet, melodic, lyrical music, nobody can touch him.
Did he have church roots, do you know?
I don't know. There's a mystical bent to him. He's recorded some hymns of a couple of mystical composers, but he's a little reluctant. But when he speaks about the improvisational process, it suddenly resonates with me as a person of faith. He says it's almost as if the muse comes through me and the music is given to me, and I simply have to get out of the way and let it happen.
So that's like grace.
It's like grace. Anybody who speaks of God as a creator or a spirit that provides enlightenment is going to understand what he's getting at. But he does this almost as like a musical priest. He lights the incense. He comes to it in silence. And suddenly this great power surges forth. And that's the mystery of all musical composition or artistic creativity.
Why is it that we don't have more musicians playing his music, do you think?
I don't know. I've had to transcribe most of these melodies and tunes from the recordings. There are some kind of lurking out there in the corners, the dark corners of the internet, people who've tried to transcribe it too. I think a lot of the reason is that his music fits him and the way that he plays, and he's been able to put something together with the musicians who can accompany that vision, and that's what kind of determines it. It's like the guitarist Pat Metheny. A lot of people don't play his tunes either, but all of them you can sing and move to.
You mentioned his recording company, ECM, right?
Right.
When you listen to the recordings, and you've made recordings yourself, mm-hmm. what about the experience of hearing him as a recorded mm-hmm. player?
The recording process is kind of an oddity. When the light goes on and you count off the tune and you make the music with the other musicians, it's a time of great focus and concentration and a time of great criticism, self-criticism. So we've recorded a lot of things that I simply didn't think were really available, shouldn't be made available. They're not good enough. They don't stand the test of time. The other musicians would say, well, that's as good as it's going to get, Bill. We've got to let that go. And then later on, 4, 5, 6 years later, I'd say, okay, that's all right. There's got to be a lag period. Plus with jazz, one of the curious aspects is that it really is music in the moment. And if you are with an audience creating the music, it's a different experience than if you go into the isolation of a pristine studio. Now both can catch the music, but jazz is not about precision or sticking close to somebody else's script or score. It's about what happens between the musicians in that environment at that time. And that, it's fun to watch. It's best to watch if the musicians are conscious of the audience and trying to invite you in and offer something to you. It gets a little off-putting when they are playing for themselves and not for you. And again, there's a kind of a continuum between accessible music, easily digested music, and music that really is over our heads or beyond our reach.
That pulling in when you're playing together, that would be the ideal for a service like you're having.
I think so. These services we do try to model both superior liturgy and superior music that's faithful to both traditions, and to kind of marry the two of them, even hold them in tension sometimes. And we've discovered some things about that over the years. One is you must always have a cantor who stands to wave his or her arms to let the congregation come in, because otherwise they'll miss the cue and not understand that you're actually playing the song that they should be singing, because it sounds different. So having a couple of things like that in place, having everything scripted out on paper for the congregation to follow, but also warning them that there are things that will happen in this service that are not written down.
And we're not used to that.
Oh, no. A lot of religious people, and I say this as one of them, a lot of religious people have high control needs. So, you know, if the hymn goes on a little longer than we think it should, we put some flack into the air. If something happens, a baby cries or a child decides to be a child, sometimes the clergy get a little anxious. It's a whole new paradigm to invite into the midst of a worshiping congregation people who are creating something right then and right there. I have a friend, Jeff London, the Reverend Jeff London, who for part of his doctoral work decided that he would kind of cross the line between different disciplines. So as he would preach a sermon on the Bible, he had an abstract painter creating something on the canvas, at the same time creating the sermon without words on a canvas. And he said it wasn't long before she was getting a lot more attention than I was, which was just fine. He was just willing to let the control go aside so that people could be thoroughly engaged with the multiple intelligences of the moment.
You have many different talents, music and performing and transcribing and composing, but you are also an amazing writer and thinker. Will you have things to say? Will you have a sermon?
Oh, yes. The sermon that day will be on a line from one of the Psalms about the beauty of holiness. And to partner with it, some passages from the great apocalyptic vision of the book of Revelation, where the prophet John is gasping to try to describe this vision of the end where everything is beautiful. And he names all these precious stones that don't seem to have been named or identified yet. He's straining and reaching for something in the beauty. And again, that's something of what I want to touch and do using Jarrett's music.
Well, take us to one of the tunes you'll do and tell us something about that.
Probably the centerpiece of the service is a title cut of an album he did called My Song, which is a sweet, sweet plaintive song. The saxophonist Mike Carbone says, I cannot play that without crying. He says, it resonates somewhere really deeply within my soul. And I think we should let the listeners hear it a little bit. It's a gorgeous piece. It's a gorgeous piece. That piece, musically, it's pretty diatonic. It doesn't do anything too adventurous, but it is so simple in its melody that the musicians can infuse it with great and deep feeling. And then as we heard, as Jarrett begins with the piano solo, he's tugging on the strings of our heart. And when the saxophonist comes in the middle of the improvisation, he's soaring toward the heights.
If people could see what you've done when you were describing John and the Gems,
right,
and just what you did then, it's
right,
the same kind
right,
of gesture.
Right. I mean, one of the things that religious people have to be on guard against, especially these days, is this utilitarian notion that everything has to be useful or consumable. You know, great art, great mystery is beyond our perception, and we're given the gift of getting a glimpse of it so that we want to reach for it ourselves. You know, whether it's a symphony or an incredible sculpture, we want something that is beyond us and yet something that is accessible enough that we can touch it in the fullness of our humanity. And that is exactly, of course, what the Christians say about Jesus, is that he is holy and one with God, yet thoroughly like us. And it's held together in tension. A great piece of art, something, again, that is transcendent, yet you can taste it and see it and even perceive it before it slips away again. You know, the Enlightenment project to try to capture things through reason and detail, it's a wonderful way to try to control reality. But, you know, we recently had tornado warnings in Luzerne County. I mean, you cannot control a tornado. Similarly, no matter how much control the people in my suburban town try to apply through weed control on their lawns, I still have grass growing up in the crack of my sidewalk, and there's nothing I can do about it. Life just breaks out and emerges. So it's not about control. It's about setting aside those control needs and making ourselves available for beauty and then pursuing it.
And yet we're safe with you all. I mean, you're going to take us and open us up, but we're not going to be into the abyss or anything.
No, no. In the hour and 10, hour and 20 minute long journey of the liturgy and the jazz, there's kind of a narrativity to it. We're going to begin with something that stomps along and rocks a little bit, and we'll end there. But in the meantime, like tour guides, we're going to wave the little flag and say, come with me over here and ponder this for a while, and then come to the next stop. And we can do this musically without words. And the thing is, the musicians get it. They really understand and perceive this. They're tuned into this. But much of the time, the music they play or are invited to play is functional. In the restaurant, it's music to chew by or music to, music to date by or something, or music that's just in the backdrop. But this is the presentation of music as an art form that, again, tries to hold an aesthetic quality about it that is beyond us. I said one time, I think that's why jazz musicians create music by the tips of their fingers or the touch of their lips. It's the order to touch that mystery without being able to manage it.
And of course, we, with all our ears and moving our bodies, mm-hmm. we're just
right.
affected, but right. we can't control it either.
That's right. That's right. And so for the truly creative artist like Keith Jarrett, I think there's an aspect in which they're on the planet and their purpose is to make this beauty, but they're going to have resistance. They'll have people walk out of their concert because it's too much for them to handle. You know, whether it's the $40 ticket in 1985 that was just too expensive, whatever. But if we wait for it, if we work at it, the clouds will open, the planets will shine through, the eclipse will open up, and suddenly the sunlight will flood upon us. You have to be a little crazy to do this kind of music or to hold these things together. We've been doing this now for 26 years, and the church kind of swallows hard and rolls its eyes, and there he goes again. But we expect that one more year it'll be a packed sanctuary, that if people aren't there a half hour ahead of time, they won't be sitting down, that people will come from 2 or 3 hours away to be part of this. And they'll leave right after the service. They're just coming for this because it doesn't happen anywhere else.
The Reverend Bill Carter, founder and leader of the nationally known Presby Bop Quartet, the group's pianist, and pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, speaking with us about the decades-long tradition on Labor Day weekend, an annual jazz service, this year featuring the music of pianist Keith Jarrett. Keith Jarrett, a native of our part of the world, of eastern Pennsylvania from Allentown. It's Sunday, September 3rd at 10 in the morning. The music will begin at 9:45, and it's always a standing room event, as we just heard. Sunday, September 3rd at 10 a.m., the music getting underway at 9:45, and again, SRO. Featured will be music of Keith Jarrett, performed by pianist Bill Carter and the Presby Bop Quartet, this tune and many others. It's the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, 300 School Street. For more information, on the web, fpccs.org, and that stands for First Presbyterian Church Clark Summit, fpccs.org. And you can visit the website for the Presby Bop Quartet, presbybop.com, and that's presbybop.com. That's Sunday, September 3rd, 10 a.m. at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, 300 School Street. For more information, on the web, fpccs.org.